6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level.
Thank you for listening to A Public Affair. It's Wednesday, July 16th, 2014, and I'm your host, Karma Chavez. I'd like to give a big shout-out to Keegan, who's engineering, as always, faithful there in the back room, and also to Yvonne, who's answering phones out front. So just 2 weeks ago, local architectural and engineering firm Mead & Hunt and New York-based corrections architecture firm Pulitzer Bogard released a nearly 700-page report outlining the need for a new or vastly renovated Dane County jail. The report details horrific conditions with regard to safety and everyday usage across the current facilities and proposes two options for replacement at an off-sited price tag of up to $135 million, which would be the largest expenditure in Dane County history. On June 30th, Sheriff Dave Mahoney joined 8 o'clock Buzz host Brian Standing to lay out the need for a new jail and insist there would not be any new beds, just a better facility to meet current needs. The sheriff, along with representatives from Mead & Hunt and Pulitzer Bogard, laid out these needs in a public presentation of their $440,000 report for the Dane County Board Public Protection and Judiciary Committee at a hearing on July 1. Supervisors asked questions about the report, though since they'd only been given a weekend to read it, most had only skimmed the executive summary. Most of the community members who testified, including in full disclosure myself, questioned the need for a new jail. There is a lot at stake here, and every taxpayer and person concerned with human and civil rights in Dane County should be interested in what happens next. So to help lay out some of the stakes for this new proposed jail, and to get perspectives outside of law enforcement and architecture, I've invited guests from three groups for a local or for a roundtable discussion. My first guest is Erica Bach, an organizer with MOSES, which is an interfaith organization that unites congregations to take action on issues of social justice, such as over-incarceration in Wisconsin. MOSES is a project of the statewide network Wisdom and has been working on issues including reforming the Department of Corrections, what's called the Ban the Box Initiative, which seeks to take the question off of job applications that ask whether you've ever been convicted of a felony, and also the 11 by 15 campaign seeking to cut Wisconsin's prison population in half by 2015. We also have with us Catherine Wienig, and I realize I didn't ask you how to pronounce your name. So
that's right.
Is that correct? Okay. So Catherine Wienig of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, Dane County. NAMI is a nonprofit organization dedicated to bettering the lives of individuals affected by mental illness. It provides free services to more than 4,000 people each year, works to eliminate stigma and nurture recovery through education, support, advocacy, and outreach. And we also have with us Eric Upchurch, as well as Z Hawkiness. So Z is just going to hang out with us and not say anything. But these two are from Operation Welcome Home, a community of homeless people and their allies in Madison organizing around the root causes of homelessness. Got started in 2009. They're fighting for affordable housing, jobs, and an end to the criminalization of poverty. They're mostly black, homeless, and formerly homeless, low and no income, incarcerated, and formerly incarcerated, and they're working in collaboration with community allies. So, Erica, Catherine, Eric, welcome to A Public Affair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you're listening today and you haven't called us in a while and you want to say something about the Dane County Jail, please do give us a call here in Madison at 608-256-2001. You can call us toll-free at 866-899-WORT. You can also tweet me questions to @QueerMigrations. You could also post questions to the Facebook page, A Public Affair WORT, which you never do, but I'm hoping today will be the day. So thank you all so much for being here. I'm really excited to have this conversation. I think it's an important one to continue having, and I'd like to continue doing it. And I wonder if we could start out with each of you saying just a little bit more about the organization and the community that you represent, and the kinds of positions that you're either taking or considering taking in relation to the proposed Dane County Jail. And maybe, Erica, we could start with you and MOSES.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having me, and thanks, Dane County, for listening in on this very important discussion. While MOSES does not have an official position as to the jail yet, what we have found as a result of the executive summary and the 600 to 700-page report is that we'd really like to push for more consideration of treatment alternatives and diversion practices, as well as what additional bed space. I believe the current proposal calls for a raise of approximately 3 300 additional beds for efficiency. And what that means in terms of those of our community members who are experiencing both mental and behavioral health issues, what are the citizens of Dane County prepared to petition for in terms of taking care of the least represented among us?
Yeah, and what about NAMI?
Yeah, so what we do in general is we provide education opportunities or support opportunities for anyone affected by mental illness. So that might be someone with a diagnosis or the family or friends or people in the community who want to learn more. Like Moses, we don't have an official stance on the new jail. We are working really closely with the sheriff because we both have this huge concern about the amount of people with mental illness that are being brought to the jail and why they're being brought there, how they're being brought there, and the kind of treatment they're being given in the jail. NAMI is really concerned about how the jail is not the proper place for anyone in a mental health crisis to be or to receive treatment. Similarly, we appreciate the recognizing of the need for a better facility because due to what's available now, people with mental illness and people in general are not being treated humanely and properly in issues like solitary confinement. So we want on the table jail diversion programs and ways to expand the mental health resources in our community, and because there's also a need for a facility that people with mental health crisis concerns can be taken to that's not the jail.
Cool. And what about Operation Welcome Home? So slightly different than these other two organizations, not a nonprofit, grassroots, I guess, in that sense, Eric. So what are folks talking about in your group?
So with Operation Welcome Home, OWH assists community in leadership development. We have freedom schools. We also teach meditation. It's my favorite part of Operation Welcome Home. But OWH, really, the stance is that while we also agree that there is a need for improvements, we want to get rid of the hazards, there is also this idea that we feel very strongly that there are better alternatives than jail and prison. And, you know, if you look at the evidence and the track record of our current behavior and our current remedy for things that we deem unacceptable in our society, it hasn't really given the result that we hope to see. So it's something, it's kind of a case of, you know, insanity or avoiding insanity. And then there are a bunch of different alternatives that we like to, and preventative measures as well, that we'd like to pursue and support.
Well, and I'd like to talk more about those as we move through the conversation, but I'm wondering if we could, maybe before we get into some of those, if we could talk a bit about this intersection between criminalization and homelessness. So we've been talking a lot about homelessness in Dane County with the proposed day shelter. Of course, we didn't even have a warming shelter this past winter. And a lot of the concerns, I'm using scare quotes for those who are not in radio land, other people have to do with the kinds of supposed criminal behavior, whether that's loitering, being loud in public, these kinds of things that are people attribute to homelessness. So I wonder if you could expand a bit more on this intersection between homelessness and criminalization and also incarceration.
Well, it's actually a really vicious cycle, Karma. And the best way I can put it, there are laws against the things that homeless people have to do. And then if you're incarcerated, so for example, urinating in public or things like loitering and things of that nature, there are laws against that. And then if a homeless person is caught doing those things, they become jailed. And then that makes it harder for them to do the things that they need to do to get out of the homeless situation. And even when they are out of that situation, things like having the box or things like a CCAP prevent them from gaining the type of opportunities that they would need to improve their situation.
Will you briefly explain what CCAP is for people who don't know?
So CCAP is an online database that allows anyone pretty much to look up public record of
So like history of incarceration?
Or
misdemeanors, arrests, that kind
cases
of thing?
And,
yeah. So it's not just a box on a form that you have to check, for example, if you're trying to get housing, but then someone can actually go and check your record to see if you have this history. And then, of course, we have 2% occupancy rate in Madison, so that means then, someone can say they don't want you to live in their housing unit as a result.
Right. And so we have had quite a few cases of and it's very common for someone to be looking for a job. They go and apply, and then the employer looks them up on CCAP and decides not to hire them for whatever reason.
Well, and this is an issue, too, that Moses is working on in relation to Ban the Box. I don't know if you want to mention a little bit about that, Erica.
Absolutely. So for those that are not familiar out there, that Ban the Box is an initiative that several states have undertaken, which is essentially to remove the first level or first contact of stigma that individuals with any form of a criminal record, including, as you mentioned, something as simple as a misdemeanor in some cases, traffic tickets that go unpaid too long could even result in mention on CCAP. And so Ban the Box is an opportunity for all potential employees to really level the playing field, if you were, in terms of getting that first foot in the door toward employment, as well as it does have ramifications for things like educational opportunities, housing, public assistance. And so really looking, as you mentioned, at those intersections, where can we remove the stigma? Because as we know, those who are either currently incarcerated or formerly incarcerated have already experienced that in their lives. And to be able to start to address some of the root causes. Oftentimes our public officials and even those advocates like Sheriff Mahoney will say that we see some factors that lead to criminalization. And so again, those factors might be homelessness or they may be juvenile records. And Ban the Box really allows us to say those factors are not as important as what you can do or what one can do from here forward. And again, given that Dane County has a disproportionate number of people of color, young males, and about 20% with some sort of mental or behavioral illness, that it is a way to say that we're going to look a little bit deeper into opportunities and to creating those pipelines.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to shift a bit to you, Catherine, and I'm going to pose a similar question like I asked to Eric, this kind of intersection between mental illness and criminalization and incarceration. And of course, those two issues, homelessness, are also connected. But I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
Yeah, everything that Eric and Erica just outlined really are issues that are at the forefront of NAMI's agenda. We have an advocacy committee that's working on these issues. And that's because people with mental illness can experience symptoms that cause them to commit low-level crimes, like Eric and Erica mentioned. And as we see these as a result of someone's current brain state, we believe that there should be mental health courts or trainings for police to know how to recognize and react to certain behaviors as symptoms of a mental health disorder and not simply acting out criminally.
Cool. I think we actually have a caller on the air who wants to ask a question about costs. Brian, could you state your question?
Well, the cost of the new jail, which I haven't heard how many millions it's going to be, is going to raise the property taxes all over the county. That will make both the rental housing and owner-occupied housing more expensive for all of us in Dane County, and that will surely increase homelessness because the folks who were barely able to afford housing currently will be priced out of the market. Another topic that I wanted to mention was that you mentioned solitary confinement earlier. That also adds to mental illness, and especially in long-term solitary confinement. And often it's people with mental illnesses that get thrown into solitary confinement in the hole in the jails and prison system. In cases of prisoners of war, they've discovered that solitary confinement is literally a form of torture. Mm-hmm. And I think the same would apply to civilian prisoners. Mm-hmm. I hope that the groups who are represented today on the air will take a public stand and oppose this new jail. The money spent on the jail would be better spent on outpatient mental health services to prevent people from getting involved in criminal activity and ending up in jails. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brian, so much. Erica, I know you just said you wanted to respond.
Yes, absolutely, caller. Thank you for that encouragement and your advocacy, because we have found that alcohol and drug abuse and dependence are even more pronounced in jail populations. Over two-thirds of jail inmates meet the DSM criteria for substance abuse or dependence. And additionally, it's important to recognize that outpatient treatment roughly runs approximately $800 per person. While this occurs inpatient, it almost triples to roughly $2,500. So the impact upon taxpayers and Dane County residents is truly measurable, not only in terms of the civil and human rights issue, but in terms of the pocketbook as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, you know, this goes towards that, speaks directly to that alternative playbook and the preventative measures that Brian mentioned. You know, there's just better ways to use the money. And I think that's a common sense thing to say. We know that, you know, spending $130+ million on a jail when we're fighting for pennies to build a day center is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us on A Public Affair, I'm Karma Chavez, your host, and we're talking with Erica Bach, an organizer from MOSES. We're talking with Catherine Weenig from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Dane County, and Eric Upchurch from Operation Welcome Home. We're talking about the proposed Dane County jail. So the cost issue, I think, is a relevant one, and maybe that's going to be one of the most persuasive things to voters. I guess my own view is I'm more interested in the kind of nitty-gritty of the human rights issues and questions there. I mean, one of the things that, you know, Brian just raised an interesting point about the fact that solitary confinement has been deemed torturous. And in fact, you know, David Mahoney, the sheriff, has gone on record several times saying that not only does this maybe antagonize mental illness when you put someone in a 6x6 hole, but it probably, you know, actually just flat out adds to it. And so if we know this, and we know that at least two-thirds, I mean, Mahoney has said 80% of people in Dane County jail suffer from some kind of dependency, why are we not talking about these outpatient facilities or other kinds of alternatives? I mean, you all probably know why the conversation hasn't gone in this direction. I don't know, Catherine, if you want to weigh in on that.
I guess I don't know exactly why, especially since I work at NAMI, so it seems like we're always talking about it, and with the stakeholders as well. I think a lot of it has to do with stigma, though. Mental illness is not viewed the same way as physical illness, and, you know, with the way it's so hard for someone to get a hospital bed, there's just not enough resources, and so they're often taken to the jail, but there's not enough resources there either. They don't have enough staff, so people in crisis end up in solitary confinement units. And so if mental illness was viewed the same way as physical illness at the policy level, at the community level, I think we would see great changes, because essentially what we're saying to people with mental illness equates to if someone had cancer and we're saying we can't treat you till you're at stage four cancer. The same way we wait until someone is experiencing such high levels of psychosis that they're violent, or someone is so depressed that they're suicidal. And when it comes to that point, we don't have those resources because money hasn't been allocated. And so they're not properly treated for. They can't find any sort of inpatient bed or even just outpatient services. And so what we think Dane County needs is a facility that is specifically designated for people with mental health crisis to get the treatment they need. And this would be extremely cost effective compared to what we're choosing to do now, which is use the jail as the de facto mental health facility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this goes to that whole changing the. So when it comes to preventative measures, a lot of that, and we had a discussion about this yesterday, a lot of that kind of falls hand in hand with changing the way that we think about our minds and about the way that we move through society together. And part of what I do, I look at meditation as my own personal form of exercise. And I've been trained over many years and taught in very serious and concrete ways how to change someone's life and also seeing the results in a very concrete way. There are many studies on this. And I think that if people become more aware of the benefits of things like meditation, or at least become aware of that whole realm that is kind of more subjective than the, or more subtle than the concrete, you know, I'm bleeding, help me, you know, then we might be able to see some more changes. And I think it will also change the people getting to that point where you're looking at the world in that way. I think calls for a change in yourself, where you're less apt to do things like put people in solitary confinement for displaying things like mental illnesses.
Did you want to weigh in on that?
Yes, I think both Eric, well, I think actually all of us are approaching this from the same position, which is to appeal to the people of Dane County. For those of you that are in faith-based organizations, whether that's a church or a mosque or a temple or Baha'i, wherever it is that you come from, a spiritual place, to know that there are opportunities to get involved. So whether that's interfaith mediation in minimum and maximum security settings, or it is a collective effort mm-hmm. within your own faith group, to be able to find that thread or that dogma, if you will, that allows each of us to really raise up the least among us. And so, again, looking at Dane County, we've had many frank discussions recently around education and race. And I think it's important to look at where those intersect with the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if we are beginning to criminalize truancy for our young people as a means to address the academic opportunity gap, what does that then look like for literacy within prison for those individuals we failed, say, 10 years from
right.
now?
Right.
And again, I know that intersectionality is that key piece. So for the people of Dane County to really look at where they can become involved, even on a very basic social level,
mm-hmm.
And truthfully, that's what brings us all to the table.
Mm-hmm. So was someone called with a question that I'm actually interested in shifting a little bit to as well. And this is sort of this question of the discrepancy of the growth of prison. So Moses' numbers are sort of suggesting there's about 300 bed growth. So I was trying to do the math earlier, and I found different numbers. So the report says that there are actually currently 1,001 beds. And Mahoney said on the air on June 30th on Brian Standing's show that there are 968 beds. The new facility would be for 1,033 beds. And currently there, on any given day, are you following the math, everyone? On any given day, there are between 750 and 800 people. So even if all their numbers are right, that's still somewhere between a 3 to 7% increase based on whose numbers. So I'm wondering is the sheriff right when he says we're not making new beds, or what's going on with this growth, I think is the caller's question.
So the sheriff is actually absolutely correct. I don't want to question Sheriff Mahoney's math skills. He's done a fine job so far. But on any given day, yes, between 700 and 800 of those beds are in use.
Okay.
And
okay.
So we're referring more so to that 250 to 300 bed differential. And to also be able to say that there are some formulas that go into play here. What makes an effective jail setting, or what makes it cost effective per inmate, is also something that hasn't necessarily taken into consideration what that looks like for treatment, or what that looks like for mental health counseling, recidivism initiatives. And so, yes, the math is correct, but I think it warrants a deeper probe.
And part of the question, if the prison population or the jail population has been decreasing gradually in the last 5 years, why are we proposing an increase in beds? So we do have another caller on the air. Mike, could you state your comment or question?
Yes. I just wanted to say that I'm sympathetic with the difficulties posed by CCAP. I'm in favor of maintaining CCAP as it is, but I think that there should be stronger penalization for prospective employers or landlords that misuse the information that's contained therein, because that can cause a lot of problems. As far as the difficulties of finding work, I'm very sympathetic, because my personal case is that I have a university degree, I have an advanced degree, and nonetheless, I have been out of work for the last 15 years. I have no criminal record except for traffic-related type offenses and citations. I don't have a perfect rental record, but most issues I was able to resolve, but my name still turns up on CCAP, and that's making it virtually impossible for me to find any type of rental housing, even though I don't have a financial problem. Mm-hmm. But they just take this information on CCAP and misuse it, and mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem, and this 1.5% vacancy does not help things at all. So yeah. If I'm having all these problems, somebody with the slightest criminal record is in far worse straits. Yeah. So I'll take any comments you might have on these remarks off the air, and thanks for an interesting program.
Great. Thanks thanks for the call, Mike. Did anyone want to, we sort of touched on this a little bit earlier, but I don't know. Eric, did you want to
respond? Yeah, absolutely. Mike, I can sympathize with you, and I respect your being honest on the air here, and I'll match you with that. Personally, I'll match your honesty with honesty. Personally, I find myself in a very similar situation. Years ago, I was fooling around with some friends. I was very, very hungry. And long story short, I ended up with a few misdemeanors from theft by false representation. That's the short version. For those of you that want the full version, feel free to give me a call. Long story short, the misdemeanors, it was, first offense. I was at the University of Wisconsin, and the district attorney said that she wanted this to be on my record for the rest of my life. And to avoid felony charges, I'm a young kid. I didn't have the money to pay for lawyers. I ended up with the 3 misdemeanors on my record, and she made sure that I agreed not to seek expungement of those offenses. Later on, even though I had graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Consumer Affairs and Business, and had all of this experience starting businesses and consulting people to start businesses, I was not able to find employment in my field. And It's a blessing and a curse, because on the one hand, it kind of forced me to be independent and be enterprising and go out and make a name for myself and make my own way. However, I was blessed to have had the background in my religious raising and also in my spiritual practice and meditation to be able to maintain a calm head and to be able to see the opportunities that were coming my way, and also find myself even in a homeless state being able to smile, go to the meetings that I set for myself, and come out of the situation. People aren't always that lucky. And, even though I still struggle from time to time, I'm able to maintain peace. But that doesn't mean that I haven't experienced the issues with housing or the issues with employment. I probably still couldn't get a job if I wanted to, or at least a job in a field with a decent paying wage that would be able to make me and my, those who depend on me comfortable. Mm-hmm. So it's a real issue. And I think that it points to, again, the need to change the thinking around these issues. It's like CCAP and the homeless issue. Those things begin to perpetuate themselves, and the need for jails. People, you send people to jail, and then it's like, what are we doing here? But increasing the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Erica.
I think it's important, if I may just share from your personal experience and what that might translate to for the general public, is currently Wisconsin's allocating more than $2 billion on state corrections from 2013 until next year of 2015. $2 billion is, obviously, I don't need to tell the listeners, quite a large sum of money. And just by taking this into consideration, if we look at about half of the jail population is actually being confined for a probation or parole violation, mm-hmm. And only, I shouldn't say only, but approximately 22% of our jail populations are charged with violent crime. So mm-hmm. 22 or one-fifth of the population is costing Wisconsin taxpayers over $2 billion mm-hmm. over the next year. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to say, what would happen if we diverted those resources, mm-hmm. Not only in terms of what a new jail can offer, but also into day shelters, behavioral health programming, community awareness and education, and to be able to say, play, that we could potentially still hold those 22% of violent offenses, but really freeing up some additional financial resources, mm-hmm. and then also freeing up our time and energy for other human rights issues as well.
Yeah.
And I can understand, if I may say this, I can understand that very much. I heard a number of like 36 point something percent in incarcerated for really silly issues like parole violation. And, you know, aside from the fact that it's kind of, it's like a slap on the, it's punishment, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, you did something bad, go and sit in time out. And when you get out of timeout, people look at you like, oh, man, you were in timeout, dude. Like, I don't even know if I want to, can I be seen with you, you know? And I think that if the institution that we propose for corrections is actually doing that job of correcting, then it should be something that's looked at as more beneficial. You should be able to look at someone coming out of a correctional facility and say, hey, you went to so-and-so, as if you went to UW. Not to say that those two are the same thing, but there should be some type of a, there should be a notable benefit, you know, an improvement that you can see. And I think that if there was something like that, then there would be less of a stigma around having someone who had been in jail as a part of your organization.
Yeah. I want to pick up on something real quick. And Catherine, I'm going to throw it your way. Just to kind of put some more facts out about this proposed jail, because I think it connects into this question of stigma a good bit. So, thinking about cost saving and cost generally, but how it ties into other kinds of issues. So, you know, jails, of course, are more temporary facilities. Mm-hmm. And so in Dane County Jail, the average stay of someone is something like 25 days or something along these lines. And one of the cost saving measures that's being proposed in the current report is to get rid of the union jobs that do the food and the cleaning services, and to replace that with inmate labor. Yeah. So that's one of the proposals, and touting it as a kind of jobs program. And then another cost-saving measure actually has to do with so-called youthful offenders. And about 40 beds will be dedicated to youthful inmates. But the report authors know that Dane County won't be able to fill those. And so actually what will happen is, this is actually cost-generating, not saving, is other counties will have to send their youth to Dane County to be housed here, and then we'll get paid by those counties. And so in light of what we've been talking about, you know, with incarceration and mental illness, I'm wondering if it's maybe especially on that last point about the, you know, putting these youth in these facilities and this being mm-hmm. built in, if you would talk about the impacts on juvenile incarceration detention.
Right. So with mental illness, or with juveniles that are maybe experiencing early onset mental illness, or having behavioral health problems that are related to their mental state. Maybe, you know, many have experienced trauma. To place them in, to incarcerate them or place them in a jail with the standards that we have increases that trauma. And so instead of addressing the mental health needs of youth, we're exacerbating their mental health issues. And, you know, I believe that to do that is putting our communities at greater risk. And early intervention for mental health is crucial. And, you know, things like stable housing and employment opportunities in conjunction with proper mental health treatment is vital in recovery. And once people have experienced recovery, they can be highly functional and live very productive lives. And so to inhibit that by taking a punitive approach is very detrimental to not only individuals but communities. And I think we have to be really careful about how we are addressing the behavioral concerns of youth.
Yeah, I mean, I just found it very fascinating, these different kinds of you know, things that are built in, maybe not front and center in the report, but that have broader implications for the kind of issues that we're talking about.
Yeah.
I was actually
going to say something.
Sure.
Your psychic abilities are in tune.
I know.
So this, Catherine, this kind of speaks directly to that whole self-perpetuation of this system. And, you know, what sense does it make to do things that not only create more of the problem, but do absolutely nothing to solve the problem? So when we have those questions of, well, what are we doing here? Or why would we do XYZ? Why would we send people to jail? Why would we have youth come in? And, you know, what's the motivation behind all this? Because obviously, if we were really wanting to solve the problem, I'm assuming that there would be, you'd see more progress, and we wouldn't be engaging in behaviors on a systematic level that exacerbated the problem. So, you know, that's a question that I think the county should ask itself, and anyone that has that even thinks about this issue, because it's going to affect them in one way or the other, whether it's having people that have been abused by this system coming back into the communities and without any type of rehabilitative effort, or whether it's them, you know, being slapped on the wrist and then finding themselves in a system where they're then, you know, I don't want to look at it like it's, you know, a secret shot or something like that, that you transform to Mr. Hyde or Dr. Jekyll or something like that. But, you know, it's just, what's the motive? And I think that's a very serious question to ask.
Sure, Catherine.
Yeah, I think that it's a cultural matter of looking at issues symptomatically instead of holistically. And so when you react instead of approach an issue holistically, if, for example, a youth displays a behavioral problem, you know, the approach is put punishment, put them in jail. Whereas if we looked at things holistically, we would have more mental health treatment, whether it's in the schools or in the community, and better rehabilitation efforts after a behavioral problem happens. And USA Today put out a report that a community can pay for an entire year of intensive treatment, disability benefits, and other services for one individual for the same cost of incarcerating or providing a hospital stay for one person with mental illness. And I think that just says a lot about a lot of these different issues we're talking about. So what kind of community resources can we put our money into instead of these extreme approaches that don't have any sort of benefit in the long run?
I'm just, if you're just joining us on A Public Affair, I'm Karma Chavez, and we're talking with Erica Bach, Catherine Wienig, and Eric Upchurch about the proposed Dane County Jail. So if you'd like to join the conversation, we have about 15 minutes left. Give us a call at 256-2001, 866-899-WORT, or you can tweet me a question to @QueerMigration. But I wanted to turn our attention a bit to some of these alternatives that we've been talking about. So I don't know if someone wants to take that.
If I may, and we'll give our host just a moment to catch her breath here, too. We'd like to keep her alive and well. So one of the pieces I think that we have an opportunity to look at in terms of a community response is what are these alternatives? And if I may just very briefly give some anecdotal evidence, which is to say, let's take, for example, youth coming to Dane County through the use of the proposed 40 beds. And what does that, in fact, say as a community, that we are willing to bring in young potential offenders from other locations, whereby removing them from their own support systems, families, communities, educational opportunities. In some ways, as a community, it suggests that we are saying you're not self-reliant. We are not interested in investing in your own resiliency. The assets that you have are governmental funded as opposed to self-driven or innate. And sends a message for the youngest population. So for any of us with a gray hair or two, to bemoan the state of our youth really does then put the onus upon us as community members to say, what can we do to interrupt that cycle or to change that paradigm? And I think some of those alternatives have already been mentioned by some of the other guests on the show. What does that look like in terms of youth tribunals or restorative justice on a neighborhood level? Additional opportunities would be for parent groups to discuss some of the common difficulties they're experiencing with their teenagers. And then additionally, looking to those who perhaps are parents of young people with autism or across the spectrum of autism disorders, what does that mean in terms of criminal ramifications? So for the young woman who's had 5 disorderly conduct charges and suffers from autism, what happens to her next year when she at 17 is tried as an adult? And for parent groups and mental health practitioners and community supporters to really get involved from their place of influence in developing some of these alternatives, not just subscribing to the status quo.
Cool. Well, we have a bunch of callers who are interested in weighing in here. So we have a call. I hope I'm going to say your name right. Agaba? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Great. Could you have a question about a family? I wonder if you could ask that to our guest here.
I'm assuming somebody already said it, because young people going to jail, or society really going to jail, the way I see it, unless there's something done to how kids are brought up today, then nothing's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can even give an example. There was in a laundromat, there were kids coming, started destroying people's property there, and then the mother comes in because somebody tried to stop him, and she started going off, you know, defending the kids. Nobody should tell the kids what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So things like that.
Definitely. I mean, I think this question of family is important. I'm gonna pull a. There's other callers on the air, so I'm gonna grab a couple other callers, and then we can sort of respond to each of these questions in turn. So thank you, Agaba, for the call. Eric, could you state your question?
Hey, thanks for having me. First of all, props to all of the people here, Operation Welcome Home, I'm familiar with, definitely NAMI. I think you guys are, part of the community that's healing, and I think the analysis is right on. It's so obvious from a financial perspective and just mental health and healing in general. I'm in clinical social work here in Madison, and one thing I would like to be a part of is movement to push for more mental health courts. I'm not really sure how to get plugged into that, so as somebody who might know what to do about that, maybe speak to it, that'd be great. Thanks.
Cool. I'm going to let Catherine jump in and answer that question real quick.
Yeah, so if you are interested in getting more involved in advocating for mental health courts in our county, we do have substance abuse diversion courts, but not ones that address mental illness. We have an advocacy committee, and if you're interested, it's open to the public. If you're interested in listening in or joining, you can call NAMI at 249-7188.
Cool. Thanks for that, Catherine. I'm going to grab these other two calls, and then we can go back and respond to the questions in order. So, Sarah, you have a question about juvenile corrections.
No, actually, I have a solution that just got started.
Well, perfect.
Here in Dane County. Division of Corrections, Department of Juvenile Corrections just started a new program called the Grow Academy. We're down near Oregon on the Oregon farm. It's an agriculturally based program using horticultural therapy, and students, adjudicated youth, county, and state are with us for 4 months, and they get treatment, social work treatment, horticultural therapy, physical activities, community service. They grow their own plants. And it's just an awesome program, and it's amazing to watch these youth, 14 to 18-year-old boys who have had, obviously, mental health issues in their family, to watch them become scholars, to watch them to become lifelong learners. And I just invite people to check out the Grow Academy through the Department of Corrections, Juvenile Corrections.
Great. Thanks so much for that, Sarah. Mm-hmm. So the DOC's Grow Academy. We have one more Twitter question, and then we can come back to Agaba's question here, too. So someone was wondering if police or prison guards are receiving training in dealing with individuals that have mental health issues.
Yeah, so NAMI is currently working with both the Sheriff Department and the Police Department to bring crisis intervention training to the departments and the staff. There are two different kinds of training. So with the Police Department, it's called Crisis Intervention Teams, and there's going to be a training this September. So if you're interested in participating and you work for any of the police departments in the Madison area, feel free to call us at 249-7188. And what that training does is it helps first responders like police and health people in health care and advocacy groups know how to recognize the symptoms of a mental illness or mental health crisis and react appropriately, and instead of escalate a situation, de-escalate. So hopefully we have less people being put in violent situations and also being brought to jail. And then with the jail staff, we're going to be using what's called Crisis Intervention Partners. It's a similar training with a similar goals with the jail staff.
Great. Erica, you want to add to that?
Sure. So on a systemic level, MOSES is pushing for reform now through the Department of Corrections. And this is an area where anyone from the local public can get involved in appealing to Governor Walker. We do acknowledge the many dedicated efforts of those at the DOC. But as people who are committed to justice and fiscal responsibility and public safety, we really do need Dane County individuals to step up and call upon Governor Walker for more of the larger level systemic reform of what that looks like for training both inside and outside of our jail systems.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the question that Agaba posted about family and being raised. And Eric, I'm going to pose it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that is close to home, just because personally, people of color are disproportionately incarcerated. And I think that a lot of that can come from the fact that people of color are disproportionately incarcerated. And the reason I say that is because, you know, mom and dad go to jail, they have babies, and those babies are more likely to go to jail.
Right.
And when the system is set up the way that it is, where things are very difficult for those parents, it creates households that are very, very highly stressed. And then you have situations that perpetuate or can lead to those altercations that find people, you named it, mm-hmm. right back in jail. So Agaba was talking about and referring to something in the preventative measures field where, and I'm going to always say this, things like meditation or groups like Operation Welcome Home. One of my clients, Freedom Inc., they do a lot of work with people of color and then different organizations that are alternatives to and also focus on the youth, like Black Beauties. And these are more mentorship programs that kind of take these children under their wing and give them a positive example to look to, but also give them some of those practices that have been developed over time to be able to navigate through the turmoil that we find ourselves in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and I think, I mean, I want to pick up on this point a little bit more because it would be a sad hour if we didn't directly address racial disparities in Madison while talking about incarceration. And of course, I know I don't need to remind any of you in this room, but perhaps I don't need to remind many listeners either that, you know, when the Race to Equity report last fall essentially confirmed what communities of color already knew, which is that Dane County is one of the worst places to live if you're especially an African-American. And one of those measures, of course, is disproportionate incarceration rates. And the Dane County Jail is roughly 50% African-American in terms of who is comprises its population, despite that Dane County's African-American population is about 5%. And so I'm wondering how the different organizations that you represent are thinking about racial justice in relation to how you're thinking about the proposed jail and how to respond. Catherine?
Yeah, I was in a meeting with Sheriff Mahoney, and I think he put it really well. And he said that disproportionate minority incarceration can't be on the table without the incarceration of mental illness and vice versa. And I think what he's getting at is this key issue of intersectionality and how we're incarcerating minorities and people with mental illness at these high rates. And so we have to address them both together. Otherwise, we're doing the issue a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Erica?
I think it's also important for us as individuals to critically reflect on what the representations are. So, for example, opening up one of our local newspapers and seeing that Crime Stoppers is featuring 75% people of color, so 12 out of the 16 photos that you see are going to represent various ethnic and racial backgrounds, whereby, again, only 5% of our actual population is going to comprise those individuals. So, again, really being able to take a personal response and challenge some of the representations that we see daily.
And I know this is central to what Operation Welcome Home does. So, Eric, I'll...
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much what Catherine and Erica said, you know, there is a need for more representation in this area, but I think there's also a need for like a kind of a wake-up call, because these questions aren't generally asked. Why do you have a group that is represents 5% of the population representing 50% of the incarcerated population? And, you know, I'm not going to say it's because I'm black, you know what I mean? But, and I'm not, and I really don't think that's what it is, but I do think that a lot of it comes down to the thinking and around the issues that cause the problems. It's like, I think Catherine, you said it, there's a reaction to the issues, to the symptoms that are on the surface, rather than an effort to prevent and go into why these things are happening. And I think that happens because a lot of the people and the groups that address these issues aren't on the ground floor. They're not a part of the communities that are experiencing these issues. And so a lot of those alternatives, the more effective alternatives that we see, tend to come out of the communities that are impacted in these issues. So, you know, I think that there's a call for communities to organize around the, and communities are organizing around these issues to provide those solutions. And I'm always going to tout meditation.
Absolutely. Well, and we're going to have to leave it there as a last note, this sort of meditating moment. And lots more to say, though, about the Dane County Jail. And I hope if I need you, you all come back at some point, because I definitely wanted to drill this issue home. Erica Bach, Catherine Wienig, Eric Upchurch, and, of course, Z Hockiness, who's been hanging out in the back. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Our guests today were Erica Bach from Moses, Catherine Wienig from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, Dane County, and Eric Upchurch from Operation Welcome Home. And I want to thank you all so much for listening today. I'm your host, Karma Chavez, and this has been A Public Affair.